now, the big read.
It was only recently that Filiberto drowned in Acapulco. It happened during Easter week. Even though he'd been fired from his government job, Filiberto couldn't resist the bureaucratic temptation to make his annual pilgrimage to the small German hotel, to eat sauerkraut sweetened by the sweat of the tropical cuisine, dance away Holy Saturday on La Quebrada, and feel he was one of the beautiful people in the dim anonymity of dusk on Hornos Beach. Of course, we all knew he'd been a good swimmer when he was young, but now, at 40, and the shape he was in, to try to swim that distance at midnight. When I arrived early in the morning to supervise the loading of the casket, I found Filiberto buried beneath a mound of coconuts. The driver wanted to get him in the luggage compartment as quickly as possible, covered with canvas in order not to upset the passengers and to avoid bad luck on the trip.
That's Mexican author Carlos Fuentes reading his short story entitled Chacmool. Welcome to The Big Read, a program created by the National Endowment for the Arts in partnership with the Institute of Museum and Library Services. The largest reading program in American history, The Big Read is designed to unite communities through great literature. Here's your host, poet, and former chairman of the National Endowment for the Arts, Dana Gioia.
In collaboration with the NEA, the Fondo de Cultura Económica published Sun, Stone, and Shadows, 20 great Mexican short stories, to celebrate masterpieces of short fiction from Mexico. Part two of our presentation is dedicated to a short story entitled Chacmool, written by Carlos Fuentes. Before we listen to the story, let's hear about the author himself. A prolific writer of novels, short stories, and essays, Carlos Fuentes is considered one of the greatest authors currently writing in Spanish. Born in 1928 in Panama City, Fuentes was the son of Mexican diplomats and grew up in various capitals of the Americas, including Buenos Aires, Montevideo, Santiago, and Washington, D.C. At age 16, he moved to Mexico City, where he studied law and began writing fiction. The story, Chacmool, was published in 1954 as part of Fuentes' first book, Los Días Enmascarados, or The Masked Days. The story title refers to an ancient pre-Columbian statue historically associated with rainfall. Chacmool chronicles the final strange days of a dispirited and disillusioned bureaucrat named Filiberto. The voice in the story alternates between the narrator, who is a friend and co-worker of the dead Filiberto, and entries from Filiberto's diary, from which we learn of the fantastic and frightening events that led to his death. In the first entry, he describes returning to a cafe of his youth, a visit that triggers a flood of memories and a nostalgic bitterness over what his life has become.
Today, after all this time, I again sat in the chairs remodeled, as well as a soda fountain, a kind of barricade against invasion, and pretended to read some business papers. I saw many of the old faces, amnesiac, changed in the neon light, prosperous. Like the cafe, which I barely recognized, along with the city itself, they'd been chipping away at a pace different from my own. No, they didn't recognize me now or didn't want to. At most, one or two clapped a quick, fat hand on my shoulder. So long, old friend, how has it been going? Between us stretched the 18 holes of the country club. I buried myself in my papers, the years of my dreams, the optimistic predictions filed before my eyes, along with the obstacles that had kept me from achieving them. I felt frustrated that I couldn't dig my fingers into the past and put together the pieces of some long-forgotten puzzle. But one's toy chest is a part of the past, and when all's said and done, who knows where his lead soldiers went, his helmets and wooden swords. The make-believe we loved so much was only that, make-believe. Still, I'd been diligent, disciplined, devoted to duty. Wasn't that enough? Was it too much? Often I was assaulted by the recollection of Rilke. The great reward for the adventure of youth is death. We should die young, taking all our secrets with us.
At one point in his diary, Filiberto describes a chance encounter with an old friend named Pepe, who likes to pontificate about Mexicanidad, or Mexican national character. The concept of blood sacrifice, Pepe tells Filiberto, is fundamental to both native cultures and Catholic conquerors. Pepe, who is aware of Filiberto's passion for pre-Columbian art, informs his friend that there's a rare statue of a Chacmool for sale in the flea market at La Lagunilla. Filiberto quickly realizes that by bringing the mysterious statue into his home, he has dramatically altered the course of his life forever. As the story develops, Fuentes effectively and artfully blurs the line between what is real and what is imagined.
Today, Sunday, I had time to go out to La Lagunilla. I found the Chacmool in the cheap little shop Pepe had told me about. It's a marvelous piece, life-size, and though the dealer assures me it's an original, I question it. The stone is nothing out of the ordinary, but that doesn't diminish the elegance of the composition or its massiveness. The rascal has smeared tomato ketchup on the belly to convince the tourists of its bloody authenticity. Moving the piece to my house cost more than the purchase price. But it's here now, temporarily in the cellar, while I reorganize my collection to make room for it. These figures demand a vertical and burning hot sun. That was their natural element. The effect is lost in the darkness of the cellar, where it's simply another lifeless mass, and its grimace seems to reproach me for denying it light. The dealer had a spotlight focused directly on the sculpture, highlighting all the planes and lending a more amiable expression to my Chacmool. I must follow his example. I awoke to find the pipes had burst. Somehow, I'd carelessly left the water running in the kitchen. It flooded the floor and poured into the cellar before I'd noticed it. The dampness didn't damage the Chacmool, but my suitcases suffered. Everything has to happen on a weekday. I was late to work. At last, they came to fix the plumbing. Suitcases ruined. There's slime on the base of the Chacmool. I awakened at one. I'd had a terrible moan. I thought it might be burglars, purely imaginary. The moaning at night continues. I don't know where it's coming from, but it makes me nervous. To top it all off, the pipes burst again, and the rains have seeped through the foundation and flooded the cellar. Plumber still hasn't come. I'm desperate. As far as the city water department's concerned, the less said, the better. This is the first time the runoff from the rains has drained into my cellar instead of the storm sewers. The moanings stopped. An even trade? They pumped out the cellar. The Chacmool is covered with slime. Makes him look grotesque. The whole sculpture seems to be suffering from a kind of green erysipelas, with the exception of the eyes. I'll scrape off the moss Sunday. Pepe suggested I move to an apartment on an upper floor to prevent any more of these aquatic tragedies. But I can't leave my house. It's obviously more than I need, a little gloomy in its turn-of-the-century style, but it's the only inheritance, the only memory I have left of my parents. I don't know how I'd feel if I saw a soda fountain with a jukebox in the cellar and an interior decorator's shop on the ground floor. Used a trowel to scrape the Chacmool. The moss now seemed almost a part of the stone. It took more than an hour, and it was 6 in the evening before I finished. I couldn't see anything in the darkness, but I ran my hand over the outlines of the stone. With every stroke, the stone seemed to become softer. I couldn't believe it. It felt like dough. That dealer in La Lagunilla has really swindled me. His pre-Columbian sculpture is nothing but plaster, and the dampness is ruining it. I've covered it with some rags, and we'll bring it upstairs tomorrow before it dissolves completely. The rags are on the floor. Incredible. Again, I felt the chacmol. It's firm, but not stone. I don't want to write this. The texture of the torso feels a little like flesh. I press it like rubber and feel something coursing through that recumbent figure. I went down again later at night. No doubt about it. The chacmol has hair on its arms. This kind of thing has never happened to me before. I fouled up my work in the office. I sent out a payment that hadn't been authorized, and the director had to call it to my attention. I think I may even have been rude to my co-workers. I'm going to have to see a doctor, find out whether it's my imagination, whether I'm delirious or what, and get rid of that damned chacmol. Up to this point, I recognized Filiberto's hand, the large, rounded letters I'd seen on so many memoranda and forms. The entry for August 25 seemed to have been written by a different person. At times it was the writing of a child, each letter laboriously separated. Other times, nervous, trailing into illegibility. 3 days are blank, and then the narrative continues. It's all so natural, though normally we believe only in what's real. But this is real. More real than anything I've ever known. An ephemeral smoke ring is real. A grotesque image in a funhouse mirror is real. Aren't all deaths, present and forgotten, real? If a man passes through paradise in a dream and is handed a flower as proof of having been there, and if when he awakens he finds this flower in his hand, then reality, one day it was shattered into 1,000 pieces, its head rolled in one direction and its tail in another, and all we have is one of the pieces from the gigantic body. A free and fictitious ocean, real only when it is imprisoned in a seashell. Until 3 days ago, my reality was of such a degree it would be erased today. It was reflex action, routine, memory, carapace. And then, like the earth that one day trembles to remind us of its power, of the death to come, recriminating against me for having turned my back on life, an orphaned reality we always knew was there, presents itself, jolting us in order to become living present. Again, I believed it to be imagination, the chacmol, soft and elegant, had changed color overnight, yellow, almost golden. It seemed to suggest it was a god at ease now, the knees more relaxed than before, the smile more benevolent. And yesterday, finally, I awakened with a start, with a frightening certainty that two creatures are breathing in the night, that in the darkness there beats a pulse in addition to one's own. Yes, I heard footsteps on the stairway. Nightmare. Go back to sleep. I don't know how long I feigned sleep. When I opened my eyes again, it still was not dawn. The room smelled of horror, of incense and blood. In the darkness, I gazed about the bedroom until my eyes found 2 points of flickering, cruel yellow light. Scarcely breathing, I turned on the light. There was the chacmol, standing erect, smiling ochre-colored except for the flesh-red belly. I was paralyzed by the two tiny, almost crossed eyes set close to the wedge-shaped nose. The lower teeth closed tightly on the upper lip, only the glimmer from the squarish helmet on the abnormally large head betrayed any sign of life. Jack Moll moved toward my bed. Then it began to rain.
You're listening to The Big Read from the National Endowment for the Arts. Today, as part two of our program about the Mexican short story, we're listening to Carlos Fuentes read from his classic short story, Chalk Mule. Weeks earlier, Filiberto purchased a life-sized pre-Columbian statue called a Chalk Mule, which is historically associated with rainfall. It was the French explorer, Augustus Le Plongeon, who is credited with having first excavated a similar statue from a Mayan pyramid in the late 1800s. Soon after bringing the Chalk Mule replica into his home, Filiberto is plagued by a series of strange events: broken water pipes, heavy rains, and a flooded cellar. Later, he describes in his diary how the Chalk Mule frighteningly comes to life. The living, breathing, moaning statue slowly begins to take over Filiberto's house, tormenting the poor bureaucrat until he's consumed by paranoia and fear. In the middle of this fantastic story, the narrator, a co-worker of Filiberto's, reflects back on his friend's gradual and bizarre undoing.
I remember that it was at the end of August that Filiberto had been fired from his job with a public condemnation by the director amid rumors of madness and even theft. I didn't believe it. I did see some wild memoranda, one asking the secretary of the department whether water had an odor, another offering his services to the Department of Water Resources to make it rain in the desert. I couldn't explain it. I thought the exceptionally heavy rains of that summer had affected him, or that living in that ancient mansion with half the rooms locked and thick with dust, without any servants or family life, had finally deranged him. The following entries are for the end of September. Jack Moll can be pleasant enough when he wishes, the gurgling of enchanted water. He knows wonderful stories about the monsoons, the equatorial rains, the scourge of the deserts, the genealogy of every plant engendered by his mythic paternity, the willow, his wayward daughter, the lotus, his favorite child, the cactus, his mother-in-law. What I can't bear is the odor, the non-human odor, emanating from flesh that isn't flesh, from sandals that shriek their antiquity. Laughing stridently, the Chalk Mule recounts how he was discovered by Le Plongeon and brought into physical contact with men of other gods. His spirit had survived quite peacefully in water vessels and storms. His stone was another matter, and to have dragged him from his hiding place was unnatural and cruel. I think the Chalk Mule will never forgive that. He savors the imminence of the aesthetic. He didn't seem to like my question about his relation to Tlaloc, and when he becomes angry, his teeth, repulsive enough in themselves, glitter and grow pointed. The first days he slept in the cellar, since yesterday, in my bed. The dry season has begun. Last night, from the living room where I'm sleeping now, I heard the same hoarse moans I'd heard in the beginning, followed by a terrible racket. I went upstairs and peered into the bedroom. The Chalk Mule was breaking the lamps and furniture. He sprang towards the door with outstretched, bleeding hands, and I was barely able to slam the door and run to hide in the bathroom. Later, he came downstairs, panting and begging for water. He leaves the faucets running all day. There's not a dry spot in the house. I have to sleep wrapped in blankets, and I've asked him, please, to let the living room dry out. The jack mole flooded the living room today. Exasperated, I told him I was going to return him to La Lagunilla. His laughter, so frighteningly different from the laugh of any man or animal, was as terrible as the blow from that heavily braceleted arm. I have to admit it. I am his prisoner. My original plan was quite different. I was going to play with the jack mole the way you play with a toy. This may have been an extension of the security of childhood. But who said it? The fruit of childhood is consumed by the years, and I hadn't seen that. He's taken my clothes, and when the green moss begins to sprout, he covers himself in my bathrobes. The jack mole is accustomed to obedience, always. I, who have never had cause to command, can only submit. Today I discovered that the jack mole leaves the house at night. Always, as it grows dark, he sings a shrill and ancient tune, older than song itself. Then everything is quiet. I knocked several times at the door, and when he didn't answer, I dared enter. The bedroom, which I hadn't seen since the day the statue tried to attack me, is a ruin. The odor of incense and blood that permeates the entire house is particularly concentrated here. And I discovered bones behind the door, dog and rat and cat bones. This is what the jack mole steals in the night for nourishment. This explains the hideous barking every morning. February, dry. Jack mole watches every move I make. He made me telephone a restaurant and ask them to deliver chicken and rice every day. But what I took from the office is about to run out. So the inevitable happened. On the first, they cut off the water and lights for non-payment. But Jack has discovered a public fountain 2 blocks from the house. I make 10 or 12 trips a day for water, while he watches me from the roof. He says that if I try to run away, he will strike me dead in my tracks. He is also the god of lightning. What he doesn't realize is that I know about his nighttime forays. Since we don't have any electricity, I have to go to bed about 8. I should be used to the jack mole by now, but just a moment ago, when I ran into him on the stairway, I touched his icy arms, the scales of his renewed skin, and I wanted to scream. If it doesn't rain soon, the jack mole will return to stone. I've noticed his recent difficulty in moving. Sometimes he lies for hours, paralyzed, and almost seems an idol again. But this repose merely gives him new strength to abuse me, to claw at me, as if he could extract liquid from my flesh. We don't have the amiable intervals anymore, when he used to tell me old tales. Instead, I seem to notice a heightened resentment. There have been other indications that set me thinking. My wine cellar is diminishing. He likes to stroke the silk of my bathrobes. He wants me to bring a servant girl to the house. He has made me teach him how to use soap and lotions. I believe the jack mole is falling into human temptations. Now I see in the face that once seemed eternal something that is merely old. This may be my salvation. If the jack becomes human, it's possible that all the centuries of his life will accumulate in an instant, and he will die in a flash of lightning. But this might also cause my death. The Czech won't want me to witness his downfall. He may decide to kill me. I plan to take advantage tonight of Czech's nightly excursion to flee. I'll go to Acapulco. I'll see if I can find a job and await the death of the Czech mole. Yes, it will be soon. His hair is gray. His face bloated. I need to get some sun to swim to regain my strength. I have 400 pesos left. I'll go to the Miller's Hotel. It's cheap and comfortable. Let Czech mole take over the whole place. We'll see how long he lasts without my pails of water. Filiberto's diary ends here. I didn't want to think about what he'd written. I slept as far as Cuernavaca. From there to Mexico City, I tried to make some sense out of the account, to attribute it to overwork or some psychological disturbance. By the time we reached the terminal at 9 in the evening, I still hadn't accepted the fact of my friend's madness. I hired a truck to carry the coffin to Filiberto's house, where I would arrange for his burial. Before I could insert the key in the lock, the door opened. A yellow-skinned Indian, in a smoking jacket and ascot, stood in the doorway. He couldn't have been more repulsive. He smelled of cheap cologne. He tried to cover his wrinkles with thick powder. His mouth was clumsily smeared with lipstick, and his hair appeared to be dyed. "I'm sorry. I didn't know that Filiberto had..." "No matter. I know all about it. Tell the men to carry the body down to the cellar."
Thanks for joining The Big Read. This program was created by the National Endowment for the Arts in partnership with the Institute of Museum and Library Services. It was written and produced by Cecilia Weissman, executive producer Adam Campy. Excerpts from Chalk Mule were read by the story's author, Carlos Fuentes. Chalk Mule, copyright 1954, was used by permission of Brandon Hockman Literary Agents, Inc. It was translated from Spanish by Margaret Sayers-Peden, and this translation was used by permission of Farrar, Strauss, and Giroux. The story can be found in the anthology Sun, Stone, and Shadows, 20 Great Mexican Short Stories published by Fondo de Cultura Económica, especially for The Big Read. Excerpts of instrumental selections from the album Manifiesto, composed by and used courtesy of Rodrigo Sigal. Excerpts from the string quartets composed by Silvestre Revueltas and performed by the Latin American Quartet, used courtesy of New Albion Records. Production assistant, Dan Stone. Administrative assistants, Pepper Smith, Erica Koss, and Liz Mahaffey. We'd like to thank the following people for their invaluable help: Hernan Bravo Varela and Juan Garcia de Oteza of the Mexican Cultural Institute in Washington, D.C. And to Alejandro Pelayo, Alejandro Madrid, Jennifer Carreliason, and Penny Ojeda. A special thanks to the Embassy and Consulates of Mexico in the United States and the Embassy and Consulates of the United States in Mexico. For the National Endowment for the Arts, I'm Dana Joya.
For more information about The Big Read, go to www.neabigread.org. That's www.neabigread.org.